you like trans people, great news. From March 31st to April 12th, there will be over 40 shows made by trans folks happening on live stream and video on demand and in person in Los Angeles. Check out The Joy Who Lived, a trans theater and comedy festival featuring incredible art, including a live reading written and directed by me and my wife and writing partner, Susan, of our original pilot, Robo Waitress Assassins. In a world where murder is legal, a cybernetic waitress is used to assassinate anyone the mega company known as corporate wants out of the way. But a personal catastrophe spurs her to defy her programming and expose corporate to save others like herself. A full cast live reading of a trans, queer, cyberpunk action dramedy pilot full of action, humor, and heart, and about how society controls our bodily autonomy and pits us against each other to keep us from rising up. Check it out at joywholived.com, where you can support the festival, get tickets, and learn how to get involved. Welcome to Tilly's Trans Tuesdays. This week, we discuss the rest of the television I watched and look at the overall numbers and see if we can spot some trends in trans representation in 2025 Media Part 4, TV Part 3. Hi, I'm Tilly Bridges, your host, and I'm joined by my writing partner, my best friend, my wife, our token cis representation, quilt maker extraordinaire, Susan Bridges.
Hello! That is not true, but okay.
That made extraordinary quilts. So.
They're fine.
I love them.
I think making any level of quilt is extraordinary. That's just cool. So.
See? Yeah.
Well, thank you.
And one more time, our returning guest is the unflappable Jesse Earle. Welcome back, Jesse.
I am unflappable. I cannot be flapped. Hello.
There's no flapping you.
You can't get me with any flapping.
Sounds a little dirty.
It does.
If you really want the full picture from these four episodes, please be sure to listen to episodes 144 to 146 for Part 1 Movies, Part 2 TV Part 1, and Part 3 TV Part 2 first. At the end of this episode, we're going to look at the totals from the entire year and see where things are at. Fab, let's get this wrapped up. Resident Alien Season 4, 2. Non-binary actor Jinx Monsoon appears again, voicing a CGI gray alien named Bruce, who's referred to with he pronouns. As the character is a literal alien, we don't really know if he pronouns would correlate to the alien being a cis man in world, but the show made the choice to cast a non-binary actor to play a character that's treated like they're male, so I have to count this as actor rep but not character rep. Because this show has done nothing to make me think they'd include a trans mask alien that wasn't intended to be a joke. Mm-hmm. I've said in past trans rep and media reports that I really like this show, but it's also demonstrated some regressive ideas around gender on multiple occasions. In episode 2, there's a protracted joke about a cis woman who had sex with a cis man, and there's questions about, quote-unquote, who was inside who, and, quote, of course she wasn't inside him.
Yikes.
I think this is just another ha-ha because women don't have penises joke, but you know, some trans women do, so it's still implicitly transphobic. Also, a cis guy later says, quote, I assure you, I am all man. My penis is mostly intact. Which just reinforces that dicks equal men, but not all men have dicks, and not everyone who has a dick is a man. We are all more than our reproductive organs.
And also weirdly shaming men who do have penises for, like, not having a penis that looks the exact right way. And we
do put
a lot of shame on men for not for their penises not looking a certain type of way. And there are,
that's fair.
Without getting, again, not getting crass, there are multiple different bodies. Everyone's body looks different, and that's okay.
Harry, who was an alien that was made human, has an alien-human hybrid son, constantly called a son and referred to with he-him pronouns, whose name is Bridget. The baby alien puppet is voiced by a cis woman, and when the alien is in human form, is played by non-binary actor Taylor Blackwell and presents somewhat gender neutral. So the two options here are that Bridget, the alien kid, is non-binary, or it's a joke about how having a son with a girl's name voiced by a woman with a gender-neutral appearance is funny because gender reasons. I'd like to give the show the benefit of the doubt, but based on its track record in past seasons, I would have to lean more toward it being a joke. I won't count it as a joke or as a trans character representation in the tally, but my gut says with this show, it was sadly meant as a joke.
Yeah, I really, really like Resident Alien. I think it has a lot of cool stuff, but yeah, that it has regressive gender stuff in it that reads as like older sci-fi writers, like not doing the work to get that stuff right and relying on implicit biases to write humor.
Exactly, yeah, not aware of their own implicit biases. Severance Season 2, 0. Still a show with a super trans premise that doesn't at all get close to exploring transness within its world.
Yeah, I have,
right?
I love Severance.
Me too.
It's like, it's such a trans vibe. It's such a trans vibe. I mean,
it's the transiest thing. Who would you be if you didn't have all of society's baggage? Mm-hmm. You were just free to be you. It's the transiest thing. I would love to see a trans character in that world.
But... I mean, my own movie Identities was in part like inspired by very similar themes as Severance, and it's about that exactly. So it's like, it's why every time I'm watching this show, I'm like, I love this show, I get it, but please have a trans character. They almost do it with queerness.
Yeah.
Where like the two queer characters find love down there. But it's not shown as they don't realize they're like what I would have loved. I mean, they do other interesting things with this, but I like finding their identity as a gay person in the severed floor. But then when they're out, they're closeted or don't know that they are, don't want to express it, and they found it in this different way. But they don't go that direction.
No.
But it seems like it's such a thing that you could easily do. But
yeah. Slow Horses Season 5, 0. In the season premiere, a cis woman insults a cis man who wondered if any ladies were checking him out by saying something like, quote, please, your vibes are so asexual. And it's weird because the character is definitely not asexual, and it's not like nobody could find asexual people attractive. Boo, what the heck? This isn't trans-related, but it is a weird and terrible dig at asexual people for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
In one episode, Lam and his team are being babysat by people from MI5, and a cis woman is butting heads with him. He comes out of the bathroom, and she's standing there, and he says, quote, I left the seat up for you. Damn it, come on, that's just transphobic bullshit.
Yeah, it's also especially, like, I love Slow Horses, it's a very fun show, but it is one of those, like, these are the little weirdos, complimentary of the MI6. Yeah. It feels like you should have some more, like, good understanding of queerness and transness, because, like, this is the type of place we would be in the, like, offshoot, like, this is the little weirdos of this organization who don't fit in.
That's a really good point.
Yeah. Multiple seasons in the past have also had these same kind of gender regressive parts. Mm-hmm. There was one season that had no trans jokes, and I was like, oh, you're improving. I think that was season 4 and then season 5, but they only have one, which is an improvement, because last seasons they've had more than that.
Yeah.
Star Trek Strange New World Season 3, 0. Here we go. There is a brief gag where a cis man in a blue suit with a big tie and flower crown at a wedding, and he says he was forced to be the maid of honor, and it felt very much like it was intended to be a joke, and you know what? I don't like that in my Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
One episode seemingly undoes the entire quote-unquote genetics are not destiny talk with La'an from the amazingly trans-affirming episode Ad Astra Per Aspera, which I did 3 episodes about. Those were eps 114 to 116. It sort of flips the good on its head and says, well, actually, your genetics do sometimes determine who you are and have to be, and that is not great. And there's an episode that features aliens called Metrons, who are kind of like sentient balls of light, and I have no idea if they have gender, but they can take human form and appear fairly androgynous. The character was played by Darush Zada, who I couldn't find enough information about to confirm their gender, so I'm not counting the actor or the character.
I will also say, like, this is... I have so many things to say about the season. I've said them in my own videos, I'll say it. But, like, 2 things. Focusing on the Metron, in the original episode, Arena from Star Trek, the original series, they make a point of having a male actor in a dress when the Metron shows up. And I think Kirk says something along the lines of like, oh, I can't really understand you. You look so strange. It's like using not like gender like coding to paint aliens as different or weird, of like messing with gender in some way, which the original series did a lot of in transphobic ways. Again, I say this is a Trekkie, so I'm not hating on it overall, but like they did it a lot in the show. And to see Strange New Worlds kind of doing like, oh, the old Trek did it, so we'll do the same thing. We'll have a character, an actor. I don't know the actor or the character if they are, but they certainly present in a non-binary way. And it's and the, in the episode they have the character's voice change from male to female. They like change their vocal stuff like with sound effects. So it's very clearly playing into messing with gender to code something as alien. And it's like we're doing that still in 2026, is like non-binariness is weird and alien. And then just the whole season is regressive, like, oh, we're gonna play with our nostalgic action figures, and by doing so, rely on a lot of the implicit biases of Star Trek of the past. And it's like, I want my Star Trek not to be nostalgia playing with stuff. I want it to be pushing things forward. And this season was just not that in so many ways, not just gender. And so, yeah, this season was particularly frustrating.
Well, yeah, because like, the core, one of the core concepts of Star Trek is the IDIC, right? And we're trying to have diverse and inclusive casts. And so it felt very like Ad Astra per Aspera was so incredibly trans affirming. And then to see it go backward and flip in this episode with your genetics will determine who you are. You can't do anything about that.
That's what's so weird,
It was
is like
heartbreaking.
contradicting in the same season.
No, that was different. Those
Like,
are two different seasons.
oh, was it? Okay.
Yeah.
But still, it just feels so weird,
It
like,
was
to
weird.
be
I
so
don't
close
understand it.
together and
Like,
be
that's
like,
not Star Trek. So I don't know what happened.
it very much feels like a lot of the, don't know for sure, but a lot of like the representation that was in the room has left, and it was a lot of the dude, like cis dude bros in the room. And I'm not trying to insult, again, I know a lot of this show is implicit biases. We like, you know, all three of us know a lot of the people who are in that writer's room, work on Star Trek in general. And I don't think anyone overtly is bigoted in this room or like screw trans people. But what I really think a lot of it is just a ton of implicit biases that are not being checked, and a lot of the writers being fans of Star Trek of the past, but not wanting to necessarily do the work to use Star Trek today to say something about today, and just getting to play with their nostalgic action figures. And by doing so, just bringing in all the baggage that, as much as I love all the Star Trek, it had its own implicit biases of its time, and bringing along all of that baggage into the present and having these really regressive messages as a result. It's why I hate nostalgia storytelling. It's why I hate like storytelling of that type, and it's become more and more of a problem over the years. We're seeing it a lot in like Avengers and Marvel movies and so many places nowadays. And so it's very frustrating to see Strange New Worlds doing that. And thankfully, Starfleet Academy, the current Star Trek show, without going too far into it, is seemingly doing much better about that, and has overt queerness. It was also especially a thing with Strange Worlds, like it had like some trans rep in the past, not perfect, but some trans and queer rep, and it seems to be just running away from that completely, and it's very upsetting.
Like the stuff with La'an and her genetics being her destiny, being the opposite of what she was told in Ad Astra per Aspera, did not feel to me like it was an intentional thing. It felt to me like an implicit bias. They were telling this different story, and they didn't realize that what they were saying was the opposite of what they had said before and implied some really bad things. So,
It's just so, but it's just so weird because it's such an overt thing in this season. Like literally at one point, like the whole episode Four and a Half Vulcans is just biological essentialism and racism in like sci-fi cosplay. Like change the Vulcans to any other race, Asian folks, black folks, anybody, and do the similar thing, and you see the problem. And if it's not okay doing it that way, then it's not okay to do it in metaphor, even for quote unquote fun. And I saw a lot of people dismissing it because it's weird alien Vulcans. And then they use that to say, not only with La'an, but with the Vulcans, of like, oh, all Vulcans are like this. Instead of it being like, this is their culture, not their genetics, that makes them logical and things like that. And it creates that biological essentialism. And then Spock literally saying to La'an, like, oh, you were, I forget his exact line, but he has a line along the ways of like, you are born broken because of your eugenics. You had eugenic stuff in you. And that's why she turned out weird when she got turned into a Vulcan. And it's like, so you're literally saying just like your genetics is who you are. And that it was, I think 4.5 Vulcans is probably one of the single, it's up there as one of the single worst episodes of Star Trek for me, alongside stuff like Code of Honor, which is more
Oh, Code
explicitly
of Honor.
racist. This is more implicitly so, but it's
Yeah.
kind of up there in a lot of its messages in what it's doing.
Yeah. Well, that's a really good point if I can get extra Trekkie nerdy for a minute, because, and this was something like I remember Susan notices that, like, in the episode 4.5 Vulcans, I think, I don't remember which one it was. It might have been Pike, but he was portrayed as the very, like, stoic, logical one. And that's what you know Vulcans as. But when you're a Trekkie, they are that way because they go through a process to become that way culturally through the Kovanar. They are not born that way. Spock even famously struggled with some of his emotions, you know, being part human. And so it's just like, it's not the whole universe is set up to
Inconsistent
not
with
be
the
that.
canon
Yeah.
already established, which again felt like we're playing with the toys and we're just telling the story we want to tell because it's fun.
Yeah,
we're telling we're telling it we're telling a story based on a nostalgic memory of Star Trek, not actual Star Trek. And because we have a nostalgic memory of like, oh, Vulcans don't tell lies, all Vulcans are like this, we're just going to do a story based on that without like looking at the actual nitty-gritty of what Star Trek has been saying about culture and difference. And it's a very important part of Vulcans that it is cultural, because it is a very important part of Spock's arc as like him choosing between being raised it like following his human culture or Vulcan culture. In the TV show, in the original series, he's very much like, I want to be more Vulcan, but he struggles with it. In the movies, he kind of pulls more towards human. And then by the end of his story, once we get in like Star Trek 2009, a little bit in Discovery and towards Undiscovered Country, the last official original series movie, it is very much like he has found peace in being like, I am neither human nor Vulcan. I am my culturally, I am my own self and choose my own self. And what I really love in Strange New Worlds season one is there's a non-binary character in season one who has that conversation with Spock at the beginning of his journey, who literally says, they literally say to Spock is like, you have to choose yourself, not being told like being pulled towards one culture or the next, like be yourself and not, don't expect these expectations. So it's literally Strange New Worlds had an episode relating this pull between not culture, not genetics or any of these things being destiny, but finding yourself within this, and related it to a non-binary experience. And then to turn around in season three and say, nope, these two things do determine who you are. You, if you're a Vulcan, you're all logical, and the only reason Spock's not like that is because he was, he's half human. It's like, no. Like Spock, of all those people who turned Vulcan in that episode, quote unquote turned Vulcan, Spock is the, and they keep saying like Spock is half Vulcan. Spock is the only Vulcan there in any meaningful sense, because he was raised in the culture and he knows like what it is to be Vulcan. He has a lot of conflicts about that, but he's the only one there who has any right to claim he is Vulcan in any meaningful way. And in the episode, they don't ever confront that. They continually say like, oh, we are more Vulcan than Spock, which is not true. And there's even like jokes like at one point, sorry, this is my hype, it's all of our hyperfixation, so I'll stop the rant soon. But it's like there's even a joke that Pike makes at one point where he's fully Vulcan and he has like food and he says something like, oh, there's another Vulcan there who's actually grew up in Vulcan culture, and he's like, oh, you got this food right. And he's like, yes, I realize the diabolical nature of salt. And it has the joke is implied to be that like, he's like something, oh, the natural flavor of the food is the most important. And it kind of has this implicit like, oh, you should stay the way that you're born. And it's like, even in, it's like, oh, down to their taste buds, Vulcans have some weird thing about genetic purity. And I'm like, what a weird, it just, that joke there, it's such a subtle thing with the food, but it showcased to me all the implicit messaging and bias that this episode had. And I was not about it. So.
This is what happens when you get three Trek nerds together. I
Yeah,
hope you enjoyed this
sorry.
discussion.
I
No,
was
it's
like, I
good.
realized halfway through, I
It's
was like, I'm
good.
ranting here. We're already going too long. But yeah,
But also, that non-binary character you mentioned, Captain Angel, where have they been?
I
Bring them back.
know. So yeah, Jesse James Keitel was recently at the premiere for Starfleet Academy, and I was like, oh my God, cool. Like, bring her back. And just also be clear, like, she uses she/her pronouns, the character uses they/them pronouns. But yeah, it's like, bring her back. I really want to see more of Angel. They are so cool, so fun, and we've gotten nothing. And it part of that reads is like we're running away from queerness because we don't. It's kind of what I talked about, I think, in part one of this, where it's like people running away from, like, not necessarily being anti-trans people, but not having the stones to like stand by their like desire to stand alongside trans people. You know what I mean? And it's like not wanting to actually be there. So yeah, it just they're running away from queerness, and it's very upsetting.
It is. Stranger Things, Season 5, 0. Will has a coming out scene, and though he is gay and cis, it is handled pretty well and something a lot of trans people can probably relate to.
There was controversy about that too, because oh, it was back in the.
Yeah, but we're not gonna get into that. Okay, we got to move on. Okay. Okay.
I have a lot of thoughts about that scene too, so I hear you.
Yeah.
Hear
you. The Studio, season 1, 0. In episode 3, someone says a cis man will, quote, laugh his tits off, and in the same episode, women call cis men pussy and bitch. In another episode, a woman gets mad and says, blow me, and in the same episode, a studio executive says they have a meeting with a guy who wrote Harry Potter stage plays. Blah, could we not? In another episode, a cis woman holds an open bottle of vodka at her crotch like a penis and jerks her hip so it splashes out the top. To celebrate good news? Sure. This show is fabulous and doesn't need to resort to that kind of stuff. It's just so ingrained into society and comedy that it shows up everywhere.
I also should say, I did really also like the show, but on a random note,
yeah.
The guy who wrote the Harry Potter stage play, he's in talks. There's rumors. It's not official. There's rumors that he's in talks to take over Doctor Who, which does not make
me happy.
He's written other stuff that I've liked, so I'm not going to say. And this, he wrote the stage play before, like, J.K. Rowling became overtly anti-trans, so we don't necessarily know, but it
that
is one of
better,
those things.
At least, but yeah.
But it is one of those, and he's written, I forget what else he's written, but I saw his list. I'm like, okay, there's some stuff here that it's, like, generally I've liked. So, like, maybe not, but it is one of those things where it's like, if he takes over, I'm definitely going to be a little, like, looking with a microscope, you know?
So. Yeah.
I said microscope, and then I did the, for, I did
nobody
the,
would have seen
glass.
It. You had to call it out, now you
I know, I know, I know.
Survival of the Thickest, season 1, 2. Trans woman Peppermint has a supporting role. There are likely other trans people in the club she works in, but there are many, and they're not really characters as much as they are background extras. In one episode, trans actor Jaye Riley Jr. plays Divinity, but the character's gender isn't mentioned. The same episode, sadly, contains a Harry Potter joke. In another episode, a queer cis woman talks with her therapist. The therapist mentions her patient didn't have the words or the experience to fully explore queer aspects of her own identity due to the way there's forced heterosexuality everywhere and the way our society centers that around the pleasure of men. There's nothing trans there, but it was so wild to see something like that said with regard to anything queer that I wanted to mention it. In another episode, Mavis is designing a plus-size lingerie launch and says she wants all kinds of models and specifically mentions trans women among them. Later, at the lingerie showing, she talks about how important it was to give, quote, these queens, kings, and non-binary royalty the spotlight they deserve. We love to see that kind of easy inclusion. Mm-hmm. In episode 7, non-binary actor Misha Osherovich plays Billy, who uses they-them pronouns. Survival of the Thickest, season 2, 1. Peppermint returns this season and gets her own subplot, which leads to a wedding. It is glorious and queer, and at one point she even says she looks forward to growing old with her new husband, especially since she knows that's not a thing all of our trans sisters get to do.
Aww.
It is so rare, right? It is so rare and wild to see this mentioned in anything. It was really well done.
That's super sweet.
In one episode, Mavis opens up a bridal gown pop-up shop, specifically for women whose bodies don't conform to the narrow view of most women's fashion, and she specifically mentions trans women as a group who struggle because of this. More fabulous, easy inclusion from this show. In another episode, Mavis wears a trans rights shirt and Khalil creates a painting of Peppermint. He says he was inspired by all she went through being black and trans and how she was, quote, boundaryless. We love to see it.
Very body positive show.
It is. For all bodies.
Yeah, I haven't seen this one, but just hearing this description, I'm like, ooh, I need to watch this show. This show sounds wonderful.
Yeah. Upload, season 4, 1. This show has routinely been one of the worst offenders with implicitly transphobic jokes, and the final season was sadly no different.
Like, painful.
Like this one right here. There's a joke in episode 1 about someone they call the penisless man, who then appears naked without a penis. Ah ha ha, a man without a penis. Can you imagine? Hilarious. In another episode, a man is trying to convince the woman he loves to get back into a relationship with him and says, I'm pregnant. Isn't that so funny? I can't stop laughing. They built a whole scene around this entire joke a few seasons back, and I guess it's just so funny to them they keep going back to it. Trans woman Gigi Gorgeous appears as basically herself in the finale, but she is not mentioned as trans. Also, she's just conducting an interview and doesn't really have a character to speak of.
And it's another case of the humor just feeling so old.
So dated. That
so
kind
dated.
Of gender humor, yeah.
Very dated.
It feels like it's from the 80s.
It's just rough.
Which is weird for a sci-fi show like that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Set in the future.
Especially strange.
Yeah. Wayward 3. Created by and stars non-binary actor Mae Martin, though their character on the show is a trans man, Alex. The story is a deep trans allegory about the way society gaslights trans people and all the trauma that causes, and how you can't even trust the people closest to you who supposedly love you to not perpetuate that trauma. It is also a pretty dark story, so keep that in mind going in. One episode includes discussion of testosterone doses, Alex not having stubble yet and not being treated like a man at his last job. Top surgery scars are shown. In episode 3, a girl wants to go to Alex for help, and another girl says, a cop, all they do is wave their dick around. And the first girl replies, quote, I don't think he has a dick. And it's not a joke. I mean, it kind of is, but it was more matter of fact, and not at all intended like the standard, yes, your honor, this man has no dick joke that is used to mock cis men because obvs not having a dick means you're not a man. It was nuanced and kind of great, and this is what you get when trans people get to tell their own stories. There's a sex scene in episode 5 where they definitely do not treat Alex like a cis man, and I mean that in the most complimentary way possible. It is filmed as a trans man in a sex scene, and that is fabulous. Non-binary actor Trisha Black also has a recurring role as Mule, though the character isn't mentioned as non-binary. Misha Osherovich, who played a non-binary character I mentioned in the report on Survival of the Thickest, was on the writing staff for Wayward.
Yay.
Witcher Season 4, 0. I believe there is a trans or non-binary actor on the show playing a character whose gender isn't mentioned in dialogue, but I could not 100% confirm it, and I'm not looking to speculate or out people who aren't ready to be out publicly, so we're going to just move on. Yellow Jackets Season 3. 3. Non-binary actor Liv Hewson returns as Teen Van and is part of the main cast, though their character is cis. Emily St. James and her cis wife are on the writing staff, and Nicole Maines returns briefly in one episode, but the character is still not mentioned as trans. And that is a wrap on everything I watched in 2025. Let's look at the totals from 34 movies and 37 seasons of television. We have 39 trans or non-binary creatives, writers, actors, and/or directors, 18 trans or non-binary characters, and 41 jokes about trans people.
Whee.
Oof! Yeah, those numbers look even worse if you remove Clean Slate, which had the most trans rep of anything and has already been canceled, so won't be back to boost the numbers next year. Without it, the numbers are 30 trans creatives involved, 13 trans characters, 41 jokes about trans people. One show should not be carrying nearly a third of all representation, and this is also why it's so incredibly devastating when trans shows get canceled, because often they account for a disproportionate amount of the representation we actually get.
Yep.
Also, keep in mind that the trans writers, actors, directors involved number includes Eve Lindley, Jinx Monsoon, and Peppermint, who all got counted twice, and Yasmin Finney, who was counted 3 times. If you're looking for how many trans people were involved as individuals, the number drops from 39 to 34. Also, remember that many of the trans actors who are counted in the total were not mentioned as trans, and several of those had all of one line. For example, I really loved Heated Rivalry, and I think it's hugely important for the queer community right now, and it had 2 trans people in it, but nobody watching knew they were trans, and they each had one line. That is representation on a technicality, but it is not really doing anything to help the sad state of trans rep in our media.
Mm-hmm.
These were the numbers from 2024. 23 trans or non-binary creatives, 25 trans or non-binary characters, 30 jokes about trans people. The numbers from 2023, 31 trans or non-binary creatives, 20 trans or non-binary characters, 16 jokes about trans people. And the numbers from 2022 were 22 trans people and 15 jokes about trans people.
That's just gone up and up and up.
So what we see is a higher number of trans creatives working on things, which is great, but far less trans characters on screen and far more jokes about trans people. In fact, 2025 had the lowest on-screen trans representation and the highest amount of jokes punching down at trans people of any year since I started doing these reports. I wish I could say that was surprising, but it mirrors how 2025 was the most transphobic year in politics, with the most anti-trans laws passed than ever before.
It goes to show two things with this mention. It goes to show just like how implicit so much of this is and how it grows over time.
Yeah.
How we think, like, oh, we've moved past it. It's like, no, it can come back and it does come back. And it also gets to show, like, while it's cool to see the number of trans creatives going up behind the scenes, the fact that
Yeah.
representation is going down also speaks to the fact about how many trans people are asked to not get, are not allowed to tell their own stories and not allowed to,
Yep.
like, be authentically ourselves and tell our own stories. We get to support other people, and it's great to get our jobs and great to say what we want, like, to get to,
Exactly.
like, be part of these teams, but we also don't get to represent ourselves or talk about ourselves. We're usually there to support others, which is deeply frustrating.
Yeah, it is. I mean, like, it's not easy for trans people to get those creative jobs in TV and movies. It is really hard. Trust me, I know. And also, it has happened multiple times to me that we have been told, you can work on this project, but you cannot be in it. People like you cannot exist in the world of this story. No trans people allowed. And we've been told, not even in metaphor, not even in the most oblique, hardest to see metaphor, no, take that transness out. And it is so heartbreaking and enraging, and it's awful.
One piece, like, I got a piece of advice, a bad piece of advice from somebody that said, like, oh, you should do more things that aren't about trans people because you don't want to get pigeonholed as being about trans people. I was like, would you say that to a cis dude? Would you say, tell a cis dude to stop writing stories about cis dudes to diversify, like, your stories? And, like,
Right?
and it's like, I get it. I get there's a level of, like, you need to be able to show you can do other things other than trans people because people don't want trans stories and they won't respect it. So, like, there is a level of, like, unfortunate, like, understanding of the industry of that I
Yeah.
want to go into as, like, a director who is trans, that
Right.
there is a level of truth to that advice. But it's also just so angering to hear that about, like, stop writing, stop creating things that are about, like, your perspective and force it into another perspective. And it's like, I'm a writer, I'm a creative, I can do that, I have empathy, I'm fine with writing about other perspectives, but I try to do so with empathy and from an authentic point of view, which is not what cis dudes ever are told to do and never
Yep.
have to do. And if they make mistakes, where you and I even did it, we all did it here, and we're understanding of, like, there's so much understanding given to cis dudes,
Yeah.
right? About, like, we understand that this is implicit bias, and we're not saying you're overtly a bigot, and it's good to say that. I'm not saying that that's something we shouldn't say, but we give so much grace for that.
Yeah.
And we so rarely give that same grace to other marginalized people who are writing about other
Yep.
folks or any other things. And it is very, very frustrating how much grace we give to cis dudes and how little, like, help or uplift or support we give to marginalized folks.
You're absolutely right. Yeah. And I also feel like not every story that I want to tell is about transness, right? But I do want to include trans people in the story because we exist in the world. I want to
Yes.
show that we can be anything. And it doesn't have to be a trans story, but even that, they're like, this character who is like a taxi driver can't be a trans person, you know? And it's just so, it's like we exist just like every other marginalized community. We should all be in our stories because that's the world, right? That's it's about being accurate to the world. Right? The world is not all cis white dudes, as much as they would like to think it is,
As they
some
would
of
like
them.
that to be, yeah.
Yeah.
It's very, very frustrating. And I also, just again, going to the cultural chilling of everything, how trans people are seen as inherently political, and how the right
Yeah.
has framed us as just an inherently political thing. Like, I pitched an idea that I was told by the executive that was like, oh, this story is too political for us. And by political, they meant it's, like, got trans people in it. Not, and the
Yeah.
story was political. It was a very anti-capitalist story, but, like, that's not what they meant. And it
Yeah.
was like the fact that trans people are centered in it was seen as the political thing. And
Yeah.
it's just
And the only
like,
reason we're political is because cis people made it that way, the bigots, right?
exactly
Otherwise,
that.
we wouldn't be.
Yeah. So,
Ah, okay.
yay.
Well, I do want to remind folks listening, especially after that talk we just had, that the actual American public is largely supportive of trans people. And even after the 2024 election, all the Republicans who campaigned on anti-trans rhetoric lost their elections. It is not a popular position. Most people are not transphobic. But the political party in power sure is. And despite the fact that words like quote unquote liberal Hollywood get bandied about, the studios are largely all run by incredibly conservative cishet white men. And that group is also largely from the tech sector and are all in on Republicans because they don't want their precious large language model, error prone, environment destroying thievery machines to be regulated. There are good producers and executives fighting to get more inclusive stories out there, but they are also limited in what they're allowed to do by the people at the very top. And even still, cis gatekeepers of trans stories and trans art remain a barrier to getting our stories told. We still need a lot more trans executives and producers to help trans shows and movies get made, but I still don't have any clue how we make that happen, because it's going to take those same cis gatekeepers to finally help trans people get hired as executives and producers.
This is something that I want to really, really highlight too. Cis, if there's any cis writers, creatives, anyone who has level of power right now in Hollywood listening to this, like, you need to go out of your way to support and uplift trans people. It's one of the things that I've talked about, like, so many of my cis dude friends who work in Hollywood get mentors because they're other cis dudes who see someone who looks like them and is like, oh, I see myself in this person. I want to uplift them.
Right.
So many trans people don't get that. We don't get mentors. We don't get people like advocating for us because they don't see themselves in us. And we really, and so like it really takes, it really means a lot if you have a person who's in a level of power to just go and find like trans people and be like, I want to hire you. I want to help like, you know, like get you in a writer's room or whatever it is to like train you and like be supportive of your career. That really means a lot, especially right now. And we don't get that as a lot because of the bias of people just wanting to uplift people who are like them, which is understandable. We all want to do that. We all want to see somebody who's the next generation of us and like impart our knowledge. But you have to go out of your way to impart that to other people.
You do. It's part of dealing with your own implicit biases, which this has been all about. But until we change things behind the scenes to give more trans creators a shot, I fear these numbers will keep getting worse. Cis producers, executives, and showrunners, hire trans writers, directors, and actors as often as you can and help them get their stories told, please. Thank you for being here, Jesse. It's been wonderful.
Thank you for having me. It's always wonderful to talk to both of you. Sadly, not always about fun things, but there are also fun things to be had here, so I really appreciate it. It was really a joy. So,
trans and non-binary creatives out there, keep telling those stories and fighting to get them out there. I'm in those trenches right along with you, and we've got to keep trying because trans people deserve to see ourselves in pop culture, in media, and nobody else is going to do it if we don't. Tilly Bridges, End Transmission. Tilly's Trans Tuesdays is hosted by Tilly Bridges and Susan Bridges with audio editing and sound mixing by Jillian Morgan. The written essay version of this week's topic and all past topics is available at tillystranstuesdays.com. Special thanks to Daisy and Jane for the use of Sorry Not Sorry as our show's theme music. Please stop by and show your support at daisyandjane.bandcamp.com and soundcloud.com/daisyandjane. You can find me at Tilly Bridges on Blue Sky, on Mastodon at tillybridgesandmastodon.social, and on Insta at heckyeahtillybridges. And you can find Susan on those at Susan L. Bridges. You can find Jillian at Audio Jillian on Blue Sky. You can join the Tillyverse Discord server by following the link at the very bottom of TillysTransTuesdays.com. We hold regular watch parties for the Matrix films and other trans movies, where I do a live Q&A, and it's blossomed into a wonderfully supportive, compassionate, kind community of friends. We'd love to have you join us. If you'd like to keep up with all the writing that Susan and I do, you can sign up for our newsletter at birdguestbroadcast.com. Signed copies of our comics and my book, Begin Transmission, The Trans Allegories of the Matrix, are available on my coffee shop at ko-fi.com/tillybridges. If you're listening on YouTube, it's so cliche, but please like and subscribe and take a few seconds to leave a comment. Those feed the algorithm and helps the show be found by so many more people. If you're listening on other platforms, ratings and reviews help just as much, and I'd certainly appreciate them. Thank you for your support. For more information, visit pendantaudio.com. Thanks for listening.